KCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, you're about to hear from Rachama Bistritsky-Klapman, who runs MASS, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. They're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rachama Bistritsky-Klapman here on Deb Brenner's Talk Line Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rachama and Family Matters.
I'd like to welcome everybody back to MASC's radio show on Family Matters. MASC, Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids, you know, we have a helpline. We're here to help families with all mental health issues, including drugs, alcohol, gambling, internet addiction, bullying. That's something we should be speaking about tonight. And we had our radio show last week on bullying, and I'd like to continue that conversation with our guest tonight, and that is special guest Dr. Amy Silverman, child adolescent psychiatrist who's very sought after in Westchester County. You call her office, there's always a waiting list. She taught and worked at Four Winds Hospital and New York Presbyterian Cornell. Dr. Amy Silverman, I'd like to welcome you here tonight.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Geriana, where's my buddy Geriana? Yes. How are you this evening? Geriana from Heritage. How are you
doing? Well. Yes, thank you, Rachama. I'm well, and I'm excited as well to have Dr. Silverman with us. It's going to be a great opportunity to go deeper with our bullying issues and get some more details, and certainly look forward to hearing her thoughts around this very serious occurrence with our young people.
Yep, and it was nice being with you. I hope you had a good time when I took you to Gracie Mansion on
I did.
Tuesday.
Thank you. So many. You could feel the passion there. There were so many committed professionals, and it was so lovely being with other folks who are so concerned about our youth these days, and how we can all rally around as a team and work to make things better. So thank you, Rachama. That was just a delightful event all the way around.
Right. And the First Lady, Shalane McRae, with Thrive New York City, who is really at the forefront in the city of making more programs available to schools, to the community, online. So we want to publicly thank First Lady Shalane McRae and the Mayor de Blasio. Thank you for having all these issues being addressed in New York City. Drugs and alcohol, and naloxone trainings, MASC has available for families of their loved ones. You can call the MASC helpline 718-758-0400 to get a free naloxone kit to have in your home, in your synagogue, in camps, in day camps, to have it in the neighborhood. Somebody may be doing drugs that is on opiates, and naloxone, which is another form of Narcan, is an inhaler that one could have in case someone overdoses from a drug addiction issue. So this evening, I would like Dr. Amy Silverman, thank you for being with us. And I'd like to go right to it and continue our talk about when children come in, sometimes years later, they've shared that they were bullied in their school or on the playground, and what that can do to a young adult, an adolescent. Dr. Amy. Is it okay if we address you as Dr. Amy?
It's perfect.
Great. So, Dr. Amy, I'd like you to please talk about the issue of bullying and what is going on in the schools and in the playgrounds and in neighborhoods today, if you can please address that.
Certainly. I mean, I think bullying is a very serious issue. It's always been around. I think the culture has changed a bit, and the character of it has changed as our technology and everything else has changed. But one of the things we know is that when you're bullied as a child, you really do have a pretty significantly increased risk of developing mental health issues later in your life. We see that often as young adults, people have a significant increase in prevalence of depression and anxiety. We see low self-esteem. Kids who struggle with school performance or who drop out of school. Kids who turn to substances, as you were talking about before, there's definitely an increased risk of suicide anytime you're talking about an increased risk of depression. You know, bullying is not the only risk factor for that, but when kids develop depression following, you know, serious, certainly after years of bullying, they may be at heightened risk for self-destructive kinds of behaviors, harming themselves. And there are also risks for the kids who are bullying others. Those are often kids who are very fragile themselves and have very low self-esteem, and often they're victims of bullying themselves. They also have increased risk of substance abuse, depression, anxiety, school difficulties, future abuse to their own partners and families. And then even the bystanders that we see in school, the witnesses, the kids who are watching other kids on the playground getting bullied, those kids often have an increased risk of depression and anxiety as well. It's an incredibly difficult situation to observe even behaviors like this.
Right. You know, I'm just wanted to make mention that in one of the dictionaries that I looked at said a bully is a person who is habitually cruel to others who are weaker. Both the cruelty and the weaknesses can be physical, social, emotional, psychological, or circumstantial. So like you said, it is detrimental for the development of the victim. It is hard for them to be bullied, and then it hurts their self-esteem. Can we talk about what happened actually to that little girl or boy in the playground and what can happen to their self-esteem as a result of it. Let's play it out.
Yep.
They're bullied up on the swings. Get off the swing. I want to be on the swing.
Mm-hmm.
What then happens to that weaker person that is on that swing?
So, and it's a good point you bring up that it often happens on the playground, because often bullying happens in the less supervised, less structured parts of schools and other environments. And so it's often the places where teachers are not as present and there's not as much oversight and monitoring and supervision. And that child who is picked on repeatedly, whether it be physical or verbal, often can end up with very low self-esteem. They feel terrible about themselves. They feel worthless. They feel they're not as good as other people. They feel they're going to be a failure in their lives. And that really contributes to kind of giving up, not putting forth effort in relationships or in school. And they can end up with real sort of withdrawal socially, where they just don't feel that they can even be a part of things at school anymore. They stop doing things that they enjoy, stop going to see friends, stop talking to parents or to teachers, and they become very sort of withdrawn, isolated, lonely, sad, and it can be very detrimental to their self-esteem, sense of self-worth, and mental health, and ability to kind of manage their emotions.
So, yeah, Dr. Amy,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please. I was just going to build on that, but go right ahead.
So I do want to add to that about parents don't realize that the bullying when they're younger even though they may not be discussing it as much, it's still in their heart and in their head. So when they're in eighth and ninth grade and becoming young adults and then having issues in school, it could come up later in life, like you mentioned, but parents don't connect the dots. So
right.
It's very important for us to understand how that could bother a child in ninth grade if they were bullied when they were in fourth grade or second grade in school, in the playground, in day camp. Can you address that, please?
Yes. I mean, I think that one of the things that happens is that kids become kind of embarrassed to talk to anybody about what their experience is. They feel isolated. They feel lonely. They feel sad. And they feel ashamed of the things that they're being picked on for. And so those things stay with them, even if we don't know about it as the parents or the teachers or even the friends. And, you know, as they're called upon to do more things as they get older, you know, other tasks of development and of life, they don't feel capable of doing those things. They might feel that they're just not as good as somebody else at accomplishing things they would need to accomplish. And so you can see it affect what they strive to do. You can see it affect their goals and their idea of what their abilities and capabilities are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, go on.
I was going to say, Dr. Amy, I think that's a powerful point, the shame, the element of shame that's associated when a young child, let's say a second grader, is being bullied at recess. You know, I agree that I've seen this as a parent, that the first reaction is often, I want to conceal this. I know that at school I'm expected to act a certain way, right? I'm supposed to get along well with my peers. I'm supposed to appear happy. And I wonder, what can we do as teachers and parents to get that conversation going early with our younger children so that they start to use their voice as a way to get all of that, those awful feelings out from under themselves so that they begin to feel better and also are getting the help that they need for the bullying right off the bat. So what can we do to get that initial conversation going, particularly with our younger children?
I think one of the most helpful kinds of interventions we can make is to really work on the side of prevention. You know, once a child's already being victimized or bullied, it can be very difficult to address it and to help that child feel supported enough. If we can create positive environments for our kids socially, in school, at camp, you know, in whatever activities they're participating in, and we start conversations about respect and about how to treat other people and about what are appropriate positive behaviors and what behaviors we are not, as the adults, going to tolerate, I think then we create the kind of environment that allows kids to understand what the expectations are and what the consequences are if people are not treating others respectfully and appropriately. And then I think we also make it more possible for kids to share with us when things are not going the way that they're supposed to or when they're not being treated fairly. And so I think that if we can start right at the beginning with teaching appropriate positive behaviors and recognizing what is bullying and what are, you know, disrespectful behaviors, behaviors that violate other people's rights, behaviors that are unfair and mean, and we can teach them how to, you know, how important it is to promote positive behaviors and treating others with respect, treating others the way you want to be treated, a very important Jewish value, right? I think those things are extremely important and allow us to create a different type of social environment.
Yeah, and like you said, it's very, very important that peers and teachers take action to reduce the bullying. You know, the teachers are on the front line, and it happens, and counselors in camps. I know that we got a phone call recently from a man that was bullied 30 years ago. 30 years ago. And he heard our bullying show and with Dr. Rona Novick. So 30 years ago, and he's still in pain. It affected his whole life. Mm-hmm. He said when he was little, he was bullied in school in fourth grade. And that was the end of his life. He was on drugs. He was on alcohol. He's been through so many negative behaviors because of what happened in fourth grade. Mm-hmm. So we really, our listeners, need to take seriously when children come home, young adults come home, and say they're being bullied. This is something that just doesn't always go away by itself. Of course, every family, every person, actually not every family, every person has the way that they're, what they're built with, what they're made of. Some people could take it and some can't. So for those that cannot tolerate it, for those that can't take it, they are the ones that suffer. And we need to take these issues serious. And you know, in 2000, I think it was 2011, there was a story done in one of the newspapers, in the Hamodia maybe, and I remember they spoke about it. Schools were approached, yeshivas were approached to talk about bullying, and they were told they cannot. Today, schools, I'm happy to report that yeshivas and schools are doing something. So we have moved along. We're doing great. We're starting. But there's so much work out there to be done still with bullying. And the schools, the yeshivas, are requesting programs. They're requesting help. They're looking for guidance. I remember Kenny, the DA, Thompson, he had a no bully zone program working together in Brooklyn before he died. I would like to go on by saying tonight's show, we have Dr. Amy Silverman with us for the listeners out there that are just coming on. Dr. Amy Silverman, she is a child psychiatrist who deals with all mental health issues with adolescents, and she's in Westchester County. If you want to reach Dr. Amy Silverman, please call MASC 8758-0400, MASC's confidential helpline, and we can connect you to Gerianna or Dr. Amy. Dr. Amy, I was wondering about the issue of the coloring books and the, you know, no bully zone. I remember I asked Dr. Rona Novick about her opinion on having those signs up. She wasn't just in favor of having them up and not having a plan. What is your opinion, and how do you deal with schools that reach out? Or are you teaching in Four Winds and Westchester Hospital, Cornell? What is your opinion on the no bully signs?
I think the signs are fine, and I think they can be helpful if the policies and procedures are in place behind them. I think that the most important thing is that we're communicating to everybody in a school community that that we have expectations of certain types of behaviors, and there are certain types of behaviors like bullying that are not going to be tolerated, and that there are consequences that are predictable and that are very clear and in place in order to address behaviors like that and to keep everybody safe both emotionally and physically. And so I think that if the signs are reflecting that we have policies and programs in place, I think they can be great. I think they can give people a sense of confidence. If the signs are up and yet we're not doing the things we need to do as the teachers and the parents and the school administrators, then I think they don't serve any good purpose. I think the real point is to have, mechanisms in place to make sure that we're creating the type of communication in the schools and the type of, you know, teaching for respectful behaviors, modeling for respectful behaviors, and also, you know, the identification of problems when we see them, that we're looking for kids who are not treating other kids with respect, kids who are teasing, or being really mean to other kids. We're monitoring the social media and the other, influences that are around and active in our schools. And we're creating the type of environment where we know that bullying is not tolerated.
Thank you. What about the role of the spectator, not the teacher, not the counselor? What about another friend? What about being fearful to open up and defend the victim and help the victim stand up to the bully? What about those spectators? What message do you have about that?
I think that's a really important point, and it's a really important part of the population for us to be targeting with our prevention efforts. When we create these types of programs in school and we're educating kids about what bullying is and what positive appropriate behaviors are, one of the things I think we have to focus on is what happens when you observe something happening to somebody else that makes you nervous or worried or you think is wrong. And I think we want to create environments where kids feel comfortable coming and telling us, whether it be anonymous if they feel they need that anonymity, or if they, you know, can kind of come forward, you know, acknowledging who they are, but being able to identify these things are happening, I'm seeing them, and this is not okay. I think when kids feel that they're bystanders or spectators to this and just watching some of these occurrences, and they feel helpless, they feel that they're going to be retaliated against if they say something, that creates a feeling of hopelessness, anxiety, and helplessness in the spectators and the bystanders as well. And so they end up being at risk for, you know, more loneliness, sadness, depression, anxiety, you know, difficulties with school performance. And so it's very important that we be really addressing the needs of all of the students in our schools and in our environments in terms of giving them support, whether they're the victim or the bystander or even the one who's bullying the other children.
You know, I'm just wondering, can you talk about the different motives that a bully may have, why they would be bullying? Because there's not just one kind of bully.
Right. So often these are kids who were victimized or picked on themselves, or they have low self-esteem themselves. And as you mentioned before, they often choose victims who are weaker than they are in some way, whether it be intellectually or physically or even emotionally. And so they often, they're frustrated for some reason in their own lives, and it makes them feel more powerful, you know, more able to kind of conquer things in their lives to sort of put somebody else down. If we can give them better ways to deal with the emotions that they're having, and we can recognize and identify those are kids who need treatment also. And so I think that's one of the really important things that we see. You know, with all the cyberbullying and some of the other internet-type technology that we see, I think that it's changed the balance a little bit of whether or not the kids that are bullied or victimized are always weaker than the bullies. I think that people develop a really sort of false sense of confidence and power when they're able to hide behind a computer screen. But I think that the people who are bullying others tend to have a higher rate of psychiatric kinds of difficulties or issues. They tend to have low self-esteem. They tend to be frustrated. They tend to be unhappy with their own lives. So there are a variety of different kinds of things that we will often see, and many of them were victims of some sort of bullying themselves or abuse of some sort.
Uh-huh. And I love
Gerianna, that, Jeremy, how you... Yeah,
Gerianna, I'm just wondering, you're much younger than I am, and you have a young, little, cute girl. So,
yeah, thank you.
Does she talk about bullying in school or the playground?
Yes. She's very aware because my daughter, she has two parents, and we're very cognizant of bullying being a real problem for young children, not just adolescents. And so, we're very communicative as a family at home. And even my young daughter, my second grader, has told me stories of bullying happening. And it's great how Dr. Amy pointed out that it usually does tend to happen in the less supervised areas of the school. And almost all of the bullying episodes that I've heard about from second grade happen during recess, where there are less, for whatever reason, schools are not, as a whole, investing more funding towards having a well-supervised recess area, and so kids know that they can get away with some bad behavior. And I've heard of everything from gum in a young person's hair to a lot of negative talk. You can't use the monkey bars. You'll have to go over there and play with that group. This isn't your group. This isn't where you belong. And so we have taught our daughter that when that happens, you need to let an adult know right away, because that's not okay. That's not something you want to be a part of. And also, if you see it happen to someone else, you need to be proactive and get right in there and make sure you support a child that may be going through something. But I think it's really key, as Dr. Amy pointed out, that bullies are often fragile themselves, and that they need support at school and at home, just like kids who have been bullied. So the idea that younger children have a tough time talking about the bullying issue and when it occurs is very true. We even experienced it personally in our home, because we've had lots of bullying incidents in the school with food sometimes and gum. And my daughter even, I was telling Rahama the other day in the office, that my daughter, I was on a business trip, and she came home off of the school bus with gum in her hair from a little boy that rides her bus every day. And my husband was right at the bus stop, which parks right in front of our house, and she is usually bouncy, comes off the bus very chatty. She walked off the bus very solemn, and all she wanted to do, she made a beeline right for my husband and buried her face in his stomach. And she immediately asked her what was wrong. She showed him the gum, and luckily he got the bus driver's attention, and we had a very kind, proactive bus driver who made sure it was addressed immediately in the moment, and went to find the little boy's mother so that we could all talk about this. But it's very painful for children, particularly young children, because even our daughter, who's very communicative and will tell you what happens in her day, she didn't want to talk about it. It took my husband prodding her to say what's going on here for her to come off with the whole, my hair has gum in it, and it was painful for her to talk about it. So it's good that we're all aware that children have the first knee-jerk reaction to hide this pain, because it is very painful when it occurs.
Well, and I think it's a very good point, and I think that the bus driver is a very important example of, you know, what we need to do in terms of creating the types of safe environments that can actually help prevent bullying. We need to be focusing on educating and, you know, teaching the different staff how to recognize and identify bullying type behavior. Bus drivers, librarians, yes. The playground monitors, the cafeteria monitors, not just the teachers.
Right. And do you think we're investing enough time, Dr. Amy? I know you have a beautiful grade schooler just like I do, and you see on the report card the section where they get a mark for social skills. And that often doesn't get the same type of time requirement that math does, or a reading session or a writing session. Social skills are oftentimes what's observed while they're doing activities in math, while they're doing their reading or social science activities. And I'm wondering, is it your opinion that perhaps the school districts and administrations should be a bit more proactive? I mean, we've done some great work in schools, certainly, but I do agree there's room to grow. Do you think that perhaps we should, administrators should look at getting together a specific time requirement? Maybe it's, you know, 30 minutes in the day where we all talk about how we treat one another, mm-hmm. and how am I feeling today, and have we observed any bullying incidents? Maybe have a bullying awareness club among kids so that they can all rally around and help one another. I'd love to get your thoughts around that.
Absolutely. I think that you know, we're doing much better than we used to do in terms of having some of these discussions and having it be part of the curriculum. I think a lot of schools are just starting to introduce some of the, you know, positive behavior type programs that help to improve social skills and improve identification of feelings and appropriate positive communication, which is such an important piece. I know our district had put into place this positive behaviors and intervention system, and it was focused on different values like respect and communication and things like that. And it's a wonderful section. I mean, I don't think they spend all that much time on it. I think it could be, you know, way more paramount than it is. But I do think a lot of schools are starting to recognize that we need to be doing more of this. We need to be teaching our kids how to treat other people, how to protect their friends, you know, how to understand what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, and what the consequences of some of these things are. It's part of teaching our kids to become, you know, well-rounded, well-adjusted adults who have good communication skills and treat other people respectfully. And I think schools have a very important role in that development.
Right. We say, V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, love your friend as you love yourself. But there are times that the bully is not loving themselves. So I do want to address the bully now. What about that bully that is not loving himself and bullying the victim? What could we do to help the bully himself or herself? What could we say? Of course, building confidence, or, you know, how do we tame the bully?
I think that's such an important question, and I think the bullies usually need some sort of mental health support. Usually by the time someone's bullying other kids, they have experienced either some depression or anxiety or abuse themselves, often low self-esteem. So they're struggling with really difficult issues. And if we as teachers and parents and community providers can identify who those kids are and help to get them some support, you know, I think teachers can do a lot just by listening to what's going on with a kid. But also I think often we need to get the parents involved, help them to see that their child needs maybe a different level of support, someone who can kind of try to figure out what are the reasons that they're struggling as much as they are. If we can help them to, you know, better understand and care about themselves, we're probably going to then be able to help them to better treat other people in their community.
Thank you. That's very important. And I believe that the bully must be in pain himself, right? So they would actually appreciate the relief once they get their mental health issues addressed.
Is that absolutely
right, Dr. Amy?
Absolutely.
Right. So, wow, bullying is definitely out there. We did not address the cell phone, texting. There are other ways with electronic devices that kids are getting bullied. In the religious community, not in the from community, kids are being bullied everywhere, but definitely there are kids that are dying from being bullied. They're committing suicide from being bullied online. And that's something I'd like to hear your feelings on, Dr. Amy.
I think one of the biggest challenges with the bullying that goes on online and by text message and all of these different modes of technology we have now is that it makes people more brazen. They get this sense of confidence that they can, you know, they can do all of these different things that they don't fear doing and they don't worry about. Often because they're not confronting their victim, sort of, you know, in real time and in person, people are willing to go further than they are even when they're, you know, face to face with somebody. And so, you know, there are terrible things that are communicated, kids who are really ostracized, groups of kids who target particular kids, and a lot of times, it becomes quite secretive. People don't share with their parents or teachers what's happening because they're ashamed and they're afraid, and they're embarrassed. And it can feel like this repeated assault. And because once it's out there and posted, it's out there and kind of continues to get, you know, passed along or reposted, these things take on a bigger life. And I think that there are things often kids experience and see when they're at home alone at night in their room. And so, you know, they do not have friends or other people around them when they're reading some of the things that are posted, which I think can be really devastating for some of them. So I think it is a really dangerous area in terms of bullying and how we treat each other. And I think the other thing when we're talking about younger children is that I think a lot of kids these days get phones and, you know, Instagram accounts and Facebook accounts and all these other things before they actually have the impulse control to make good decisions about what they post and what they do. And so one of the things that also happens is that sometimes, you know, in impulsive ways, kids will communicate things that if they really had the kind of stops and the ability to inhibit their impulses, they might not post those same things. And so there's a development piece that goes along with this, too, that I think can be quite concerning. And I think that, you know, we don't always supervise the, you know, internet and phone communications in as significant a way as we may need to in order to really promote positive behaviors with this type of communication.
Dr. Amy, parents usually don't find out about what goes on the internet, on their child's cell phone, on their iPad, or wherever it is they may be in their room. And that's why the very most important message that MASC has for parents is keep their computers when they're very young, especially, but they should always be in a public place. Try very hard not to give your kids any access to internet without the proper filters. Anyone can call MASC at 718-758-0400 to get numbers for different companies for filters. Very important. Everything must have the proper filter. And then, even with the proper filter, there are kids that are able to break through and be on the internet. So parents usually are the last to know about what's going on in their kids' life. Today, very young, there are kids that are on the internet when the parents are not home from work. They're able to get on. Maybe one of the family members left the computer on. They get on, you know, by mistake. We need to be very, very aware of the technological generation that we're in. All the computers that are in your home must have filters. Please, all our listeners tonight, please make sure that your young kids don't get on. Dr. Amy and Gerianna, don't we know too many kids that get on and not only are being bullied, but they are then exposed to pornography? And that's just a whole nother show.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But it's something
that is
really
right.
going on every day on our helpline. Gerianna, when you were in the office on Tuesday, we had 5 families that called in. Young kids, by mistake, were exposed to pornography on the computer or their cell. Do you remember Tuesday? Gerianna? Did we lose Gerianna? We may have lost her. Dr. Amy, do you want to talk about the combination of bullying and some of what kids are forced to do when they're bullied on their computers?
Sure. I think that when all of this takes place on the computer or with the phones, it takes on a whole nother level. And I think that kids feel, exposed to the world, and they feel that everybody knows, what's been posted or what's being circulated. And so I think one of the things that tends to happen is that the shame and the embarrassment and the loneliness and feeling of isolation is magnified a tremendous amount. And so I think that that you start to see more, more repercussions in terms of kids who don't know what to do to deal with the things that are happening, or feel they have to do something much more extreme or dramatic in order to escape from that pressure and stress. And I think that can be an incredibly difficult position for them. And I think that you're right that I don't think we monitor enough what is happening with the kids. And, I hear this in my office all the time, kids who will tell me things that, their parents don't know that they're watching this or looking at this or seeing this or communicating with these people. And it's so important that we as parents try to create environments in our own homes where we promote that kind of communication so that kids will feel comfortable telling us things. Because I think that it again contributes to this feeling of isolation and not knowing how to deal with the stresses that are facing them.
So, Dr. Amy, let's get down to brass tacks here. So we know there are bullies out there, and we know there are victims of bullies, but we really need to focus on what can a school do? Real practical tips for those teachers out there so they can hear from you what they can do when there is a bullying issue. Because there are times that there are people that say, both parents and teachers, administrators, may say, children will be children. And we're not talking about that. We're talking today on the Mask Radio Show of Family Matters on bullying, when it's bullying. So, Dr. Amy, can you give us some tips on what the schools can be doing today to prevent bullying and to intervene when there are bullies that are bullying fourth graders to second graders in the school, and any age, or on the playground? The camp counselors that are having now camp, they're in camp, they're in the playground, what can they do?
I think that's such an important question, because I think we always want to know what can we practically do and what can we implement to try to prevent some of the things that cause problems for our children. So I think the first important thing is that we need to take things seriously, recognize and identify them. So we need to be watching, listening, we need to be present, and we need to be looking and observing when we're on the playground. We need to have more staff in those unstructured spots. We should have bus monitors, and we should have playground monitors, and we should have people, teachers are in the cafeteria, but they're often not watching the children. We need to have them engaged and involved, walking around, listening to what's happening. So I think that's the first thing, is really identifying and monitoring and being present. We need to support the kids who come to us that they are struggling or that they are being bullied. We need to listen to them. We need to stop it in whatever way we can. We can help role play with them, give them, help them to figure out how to problem solve, teach them how to walk away, once we have stopped something, to come back and follow up with that child afterwards to show that you're really committed to them. I think we need to have sensitive follow-up so that we're not, it's not always a great idea to have a meeting with the bully and the child who's being bullied, because that can end up promoting things further. So we often want to have a more sensitive individual meeting with the child who's telling us that they're being bullied. We want to put into place some of these positive behavioral interventions in the school, teaching kids how to be assertive, teaching them the importance of respect, communication, and positive behaviors. We want to have a clear policy at our school or our camp or whatever group we're running about what we expect in terms of positive behaviors and what we will not tolerate in terms of negative behaviors, and what the consequences are if we see negative behaviors. And then we want to also have involvement of the parents. We want to be teaching the parents what we want the kids to be doing. We want to be involving the parents in our positive behavior kind of structure. And we want to be identifying when there's a problem with a particular child. We want to be talking with that parent about what kind of support we think their child might need. Those are the main things I'm thinking of. I'm sure there are others. There are many things I think we can do. But those are some of the things I think are most important.
Thank you. Gerianna, did you want to add something?
Yes, I just wanted to say that, first of all, Dr. Amy, I think I admire your quest for there can always be more answers to what we can do from a preventative perspective, and you always try to go after as many options as you can, which is so helpful to parents like myself. I know in my social circle that for whatever reason, it's often difficult for parents to talk about bullying and get together as a group. And I'm wondering if perhaps school districts and schools have like a Wednesday coffee check-in for parents after work where we can stop in and trade stories and just check in with one another about behavioral issues as a way to kind of rally around each other and feel like a team as a community. What do you think about that in particular?
I think that's a great idea, and I think one of the things that could do is to promote positive, respectful communication among the parents. Because then this is a whole other issue, but sometimes the parents don't treat each other so nicely. And so, you know, if we can model for our kids the kind of behaviors and interactions they should be having with each other by having these really good, positive, proactive, respectful conversations and communications among the parents as well, I think that's really helpful. Our kids watch and listen to everything that we do.
Yes, yes. They do.
Yeah, they sure do. Dr. Amy, what about two parents living next door to each other or in a bungalow colony together and two kids, they're both friends or neighbors, and their two kids are, you know, involved, one child with other bullying. So what happens when two friends and two neighbors, the parents start to sort of, you know, blame each other about it? What could we offer to those next door neighbor parents to say how to deal with it?
That's such a great question. It's such a difficult situation because I think parents can get very defensive of their children, and we all obviously want to see the best in our kids, and we want to believe that things are happening a certain way. I think we have to, you know, really, I think the idea of these, you know, of coffees or of you know, environments where parents can get together and just talk about what's going on can be really helpful because it can sometimes take the stigma out of some of what we talk about. I also think just, you know, we can model problem solving. You know, as adults, presumably and hopefully we've learned how to problem solve, and we've learned how to see the good and the bad in every situation, and that we know that things are not so black and white. And if we can try to put aside our own pride and defensiveness, and, you know, and the narrow way we sometimes see situations, and we can try to see things in a broad way and really communicate with our neighbors and our friends, I think that has a lot of impact on how our children communicate with each other as well.
Right.
Yeah, I'm glad
they're watching us all the time.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned stigma. Gerianna, would you like to tell our listeners about our stigma billboard?
Yes, we have a new billboard for mask, and in fact, I believe it just went up. When was that, Rahama? Just this week, in fact?
Yep, last weekend.
Yay, last weekend. And I love it because the stigma-free really stands out, and as you can see with bullying and other issues that we've addressed, it really comes back to that common thread of the stigma issue. And as Dr. Amy pointed out, you know, parents get defensive about their children, and I think we've all experienced that from time to time, if we're really honest. I know I have. And I think it's good, again, going back to what she said about trading the stories, because then we realize, look, we're in this together. It's not just your school or my school. It's our neighborhood. And the more that we can have that mindset, and through modeling with our behavior, showing our children, this is how we problem solve. This is how we speak to someone when we don't agree with them, or we have an issue that they hurt our feelings, or something they said caused us to feel awful about something, that they're watching us constantly. And I think that you can never underestimate our behavior and then the impact that has on our children.
That's very important.
Yeah.
And, wow, we're going to be running out of time. Dr. Amy,
I
hope that you'll come on again to talk about all these important issues that we're dealing with, mental health issues. And Gerianna, I love that you're on with me. I'm glad that we were able to get that billboard up of stigma-free.
Yes.
Stigma-free is so important. We need to learn to work towards seeing the person, not the illness. And actually, on our billboard, co-sponsored by Compass Detox, I want everyone to know that it says mental health, addictions, but in big, bold words, school, because things do start when kids are younger, and it's a school issue that people don't realize. Maybe when their kid is 17, on drugs and alcohol, gambling, porn addiction, they need to realize that there's an underlying issue that they have or may have had, and they need to go all the way back, sometimes to second and third grade. I remember that we had a therapist walk into my office several years ago, and a principal called on my phone, and I excused myself with him. I was in a meeting, and I said, do you mind if I take that call? It's a principal, and you can't always get through to the principals easily, and he's returning my call. He said, of course.
Right.
And I speak to the principal about a client, and a few minutes I see that the therapist that came to see me in my office about a client that he wanted to review with me what resources we can offer. Well, I saw he was very, very uncomfortable. And when I hung up, I said, didn't I ask you if it's okay to take that call? He goes, yes, 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 I'm sorry. It's just when I was in fourth grade, something happened to me with my class, in my class, that it still brings back horrific memories. And I saw him sweating. He was so hurt. He was angry. You saw this 30-year-old, 6'3" guy sitting in my office like a little boy in fourth grade. So we did go and get this young man the help he needed, but I'm bringing this up just to make a point that the man is a therapist. He's in his 30s, and yet talking to a principal, me talking to the principal, not him, just being in the room with someone talking to a principal, the pain that came up because the principal telling him with his in front of classmates, you will never amount to anything. So the pain went with him all the years. Imagine from fourth grade till he was 30. So this is very real when we talk about bullying, especially bullying is very real, and parents need to realize how real it is and how it can go in to your loved ones' lives many years later. It could come out when you don't even realize that is what they may be acting out on. I just want to tell our listeners tonight that if you're interested in listening on a podcast, you can reach us at 718-719-1092. We're on every Thursday night from 9 to 10 p.m., Family Matters. And you can listen online or at 701-719-1117. You can call in for Masks Show, our special number. I'm going to repeat that. Special number to call in to listen, 701-719-1117, or by podcast, 701-719-1092, and you are going to be able to listen the week and the week before's shows. So you can listen to last week's show as well, Dr. Rona Novick, on bullying as well. Dr. Amy, any last words that you'd like to share with our listeners tonight?
I think the one thing I would want to just add and close with is that if you're ever worried about something that might be going on with your child, and you think there might be a bullying issue, you know, take it seriously and ask. Ask the questions, provide the support, and listen. Because if we're open to it and we identify it, we can really help them to resolve the problems.
We must love the next person like we love ourselves. And be above bullying. Kindness feels good, too. Our number is 718-758-0400. And I'd like to thank you, Dr. Amy. And Gerianna?
Yeah,
there?
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being
Amy.
On with
blessing
us.
Blessing having you.
And I'd like to thank all our listeners for listening in. Call 718-758-0400 to MASK's confidential helpline on all mental health issues. Have a good evening and have a good Shabbos. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Jay Booksbaum. You know me probably from wine and spirits, but I want to tell you something. Even though I'm in that area of expertise, Rakama Bistritsky Klapman, who runs MASK, Mothers and Fathers, the Line Saving Kids, they're in their 20th anniversary. They've got over 45,000 families that they've helped over the years. It's an amazing program. It's called Family Matters. And if you've got any issues with bullying or alcohol or substance abuse or any other kind of abuse, they're your place to go. I'm really excited to introduce you all to Rakama Bistritsky Klapman here on Dev Brenner's Talkline Communications Network every Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Listen to Rakama and Family Matters.
In case you missed our interview with Yoli Friedman, CEO of Credit Capital, you can still take advantage of their unique services as featured on the radio. Whether you're looking to invest in a business, do some construction on your home, or repay high-interest debt, Credit Capital can assist you with up to $250,000 at 0% interest from 12 to 21 months. How do they do this? Traditional loans require you secure their money with either collateral or at least 2 years of income statements. Credit Capital will utilize your personal credit to apply for personal credit from popular banks such as Chase, Bank of America, Capital One, and others to secure your credit. Credit Capital is not a credit repair service, but helps you if you have made timely payments, even if you have a low score, to obtain funds for your personal or business use. They've helped hundreds of people in the community and would love to help you. For more information and a free consultation, please call 212-321-0333. That's 212-321-0333 or online at creditcapitalny.com. Mention this program for a 10% discount. That's 212-321-0333. Credit Capital to help you.
KCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.